That's abrupt. That's Judy Collins, a rather nice theme about Marat. And, of course, the French are probably singing it today. I don't know. I think we are joined by Zafar Benkash. Are you there, Zafar?
Hello, Phil. Yes, I'm with you.
Thank you very much. We had to turn to you immediately. There's been an election in the Islamic Republic, and suddenly the U.S. and Canada and others who always say, oh, it's just democracy and there's no freedom and you can't breathe, you can't go, you can't walk down the street without being beaten up by the government. And then all of a sudden they say, oh, ooh, this looks interesting. There's a reform person has been elected. This is, I'm just talking headlines from the Globe, et cetera. Iran has real elections.
Exactly.
And they called it, by the way, one last thing, they say, called it a snap election. It was not a snap election. They followed their constitution.
Yes, yeah. Of course. Basically, so,
please talk about it.
It was necessitated by the fact that the former president, Ibrahim Raisi, who was killed in a helicopter crash on May the 19th, together with his foreign minister and the governor of East Azerbaijan province and a number of other people, Iran's constitution stipulates that the first vice president should immediately take over if the president is incapacitated or he dies. And the constitution also stipulates that new elections must be held within 50 days to elect a new president. So that is what happened. The first round of elections took place on June 28th. And according to the Constitution, any candidate that secures 50% plus one vote would be declared the winner. But of the four candidates that had participated in the first round, nobody secured that 50% plus one vote, so it required a runoff election 1 week later, which was on July the 5th. And in that runoff election, the candidates that secured the first and second place in the first round basically squared off with each other. And these two candidates, of course, were Dr. Masoud Pezeshkian, who has been elected the president now.
It's Pezeshkian.
Sorry?
I just was learning to say his name. It's Pezeshkian.
Pezeshkian, yes.
Pezeshkian.
He's from Tabriz. He has been a former health minister. Prior to that, he also had served as deputy health minister. He's actually a heart specialist. He's a heart surgeon. And he had also served for quite a while as chancellor of Tabriz University, as well as head of the medical faculty, as he was. And he had also been a member of parliament from about 2006. Mm-hmm. Twice he ran for the presidency as well, the first time in 2013 and the second time in 2021. But on those two occasions, obviously, he wasn't successful. But a third time around, he secured the largest number of votes. And it's also interesting to note, I've been sort of, you know, as you mentioned, it seems to be election season. On July the 4th, we had elections in Britain. July the 5th, we had elections in Iran. Yes. And July the 6th, we had the final round of elections in France. We see in Britain, you know, the turnout was quite low. And although the Labour Party secured 412 seats in Parliament, but in terms of the popular vote, in terms of the votes that have been cast, they only got 34%. And if you look at the total electoral map, this party got into parliament with only 20% of the, you know, people that were eligible to vote. Of course, you know, the turnout was, as I said, quite low in England.
By the way, they always mock Iran, saying, oh, looks like the vote is down. but it's not down like it is in the UK.
Exactly. And, you know, the amazing thing is that, you know, I was reading the reports. Everybody was saying, oh, Labour has swept the polls and, you know, they've got such a vast majority in Parliament. Yes, of course, but that's basically based on first past the post situation, whereby, you know, anybody who beats all the other rivals automatically gets in as the elected representative. But as I mentioned, in the popular vote, the Labour Party actually got less than 20% of the vote. And this was pointed out during his first press conference. Many journalists, British journalists, pointed this out to him, to Keir Starmer, the new prime minister, that this is what you've got. And it clearly indicates that 80% of the people, of the remaining 80%, the vast majority did not even bother to vote because they have no faith in the electoral system. And those who did vote, only 35% of them voted for the Labour Party.
Mm-hmm.
But I also want to point out, you know, I was sort of, you know, following the news, apart from these quite erroneous statements about the Labour Party winning such a huge majority, very few media outlets mentioned the fact that there were 20 independent candidates that won, and these independent candidates basically ran on the ending of war in Gaza and recognition of the Palestinian state, including, of course, you know, Jeremy Corbyn, the former Labour Party leader.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted, first of all, the Labour Party, imagine, he's a former leader of the Labour Party, and the Labour Party actually stopped him from running on their ticket. So he said, okay, I will run as an independent. And so they threw him out of the party. Can you imagine? he wanted to run on a Labour ticket, but they wouldn't give it to him. And then he said, okay, I run as an independent. And they threw him out of the party. So he ran as an independent, and he won by a massive majority.
Yes.
So that's real victory for Jeremy Corbyn, as well as the 19 other candidates, most of whom, of course, beat Labour candidates in their various ridings. Some of the candidates that had stood up were totally unknown. Like, you know, there's a person by the name of Shaukat Adam, who I think ran from Birmingham, I believe, who beat a leading Labour candidate in that constituency. So you see that the sentiment, and it's not just Muslim candidates, it's generally the British public, overall were quite upset with the manner in which the Conservative Party, the right-wing party led by Rishi Sunak, how they were co-tying to the Zionist lobby and were all gung-ho about, you know, continuing the war on Gaza, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the public sentiment in Britain was and is opposed to that war. They want a ceasefire, and it has been demonstrated that these independent candidates, 20 of them, have got into Parliament. That's not a small number of, you know, independent candidates getting in. When you add an additional 73 candidates for the Liberal Democrats, it is quite a respectable number of parliamentarians that have got in now in the British Parliament, and so they will have quite a significant say over there. And as, you know, Sid had pointed out on your program earlier, Sinn Féin did very well as well, although their 8 candidates are not going to take the oath.
Isn't that amazing that they run saying, vote for us, we're going to rejoin Ireland, that's our position, we support the Palestinians, and we won't actually go to the parliament, and people say, okay, they vote for them.
They still vote for them, exactly. That shows the
That's a referendum, isn't it, on the point?
Absolutely, absolutely. So I think the tide is now turning in Britain, but let's come back to Iran.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, in the second round, the turnout was more than 30 million people out of something like 60 million. And Dr. Pezeshkian, won 53.5% of the votes cast. So that's, you know, when you want to compare it to what happened in Britain, it's far better. And of course, you know, one of the tragic situations that we have is that although Iran welcomes its citizens who are living abroad to participate in the elections, Canada refused to allow them to cast their ballot here. Can you imagine? I mean, Canada is supposed to be a democracy, and yet it would not allow Iranians living in Canada or people of Iranian origin to cast their ballot.
It's almost like they're shooting themselves in the foot, right? They're only, it's some kind of principle to try to damage Iran. But these are people who have a right to access. It's permitted for other nationalities, others, but they can't resist trying to be disruptive and destructive.
That's the tragedy. You know, one would have thought that Canada, of all countries, would not prevent expatriate Iranians to participate in the elections, or at least. Cast their...
They're saying they don't trust them, aren't they? Aren't they saying that these are foreigners that we don't trust? It's
exactly.
It's a racial...
but you see, this is incredible that, you know, on the one hand, there is this constant propaganda and, of course, this noisy minority that is referred to as the two groups of people, the monarchists and the munafiqeen. The MEK, who get a lot of media coverage, etc., and the impression that is created is that this noisy minority is the majority. And if that were the case, they should have allowed them to participate in the election,
yes.
To cast their ballot and express their opinion. Mm-hmm. They were not permitted to do so. In Britain, there were arrangements for. People of Iranian origin to participate in Iran's presidential elections, although in many instances the Munafiqeen attacked people that had gone to cast their ballot. So it indicates to you the kinds of unfortunate politics that are being played here and how the West's hostility towards Iran manifests itself.
Yes.
There's also, of course, you know, we need to look at this aspect. You know, there's constant reference to Dr. Pezeshkian as being a moderate, etc., or a reformist. Let me say something about that.
Mm-hmm.
You see, in Iran, there aren't these clear designations. These labels are actually not quite accurate because... for instance, when Dr. Pezeshkian was a member of the parliament, although he was labeled as a reformist, but he was better known as an independent parliamentarian. Mm-hmm. And he welcomed that designation because in Iran, there are no political parties. There are only political trends. But these trends are not rigid. So, for instance, a candidate or a parliamentarian who may vote on one issue on one side of the political divide, mm-hmm. may not necessarily vote for the same side on another issue. Mm-hmm. They're totally independent. They're not whipped into line as they are done in, you know, so-called Western democracies.
Yes,
where
where they actually have people called whips.
Yes, exactly. And they crack the whip.
That's democracy.
To, you know, follow the government's line, otherwise you are out.
Yes.
There is no such thing in Iran. You vote according to your conscience. And I think that is what true democracy is. That is what really is mm-hmm. Is what is required so that each member of parliament can express their view and their opinion openly and represent the sentiments of their constituency accurately. There have been the reports about, after the election, there have been reports, now that we have a moderate, now we can you know, strike a deal with
go
him.
Go back to the somewhere in Europe and have a meeting, yes.
Exactly. You see, this is one of those unfortunate self-deceptive descriptions that you know, the West basically continues to talk up. As you know, we know prior to the elections, they were dismissing these elections as, you know, irrelevant. Turnout is going to be low. People are fed up. They don't like the system, etc. Now that, you know, the elections have turned out to be, you know, the participation has
surprised
been
them.
Very, very, very good. Now they've turned around. Previously they were saying, well, the election is already decided. There's going to be, you know, X, Y, Z. The extremist is going to get in, etc. And that didn't happen. Now they're saying, we got the guy that we can make a deal with.
Yes.
And the deal that they're talking about is that, you know, Iran is going to submit to American demands and accept U.S. hegemony, which will never happen. I can assure you that in Iran, no matter what label or designation they put on any particular candidate, they are all committed to the principles of the Islamic Revolution. Their approach may be different, but they are committed to the principles of the Islamic Revolution, and that is that Iran will continue to maintain its independent foreign and domestic policy, and it will not take dictation from anybody, whether it's the U.S. or any other power. And they are prepared to, you know, make enormous sacrifices for that dignified position. And they have. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Iran has been under U.S. and Western sanctions for all of its existence since the Islamic Revolution succeeded. It has, of course, cost dearly economically to Iran, but they are prepared to make those sacrifices because they believe that living a dignified existence is much more important than submitting to the demands of these predatory powers.
Yes, I remember years ago the Imam Khomeini said, "We didn't make the revolution to argue about the price of watermelons."
Exactly.
We're speaking to Zafar Benghash, who is an authority on these matters. I wanted to note, Zafar, that struck me. We had this really bizarre debacle of, they call it debate in the United States, which was not a debate, and no rules. It's just peculiar behavior by two really terrible individuals, in my view. But one of the things that was striking to me was how they have deteriorated. They didn't shake hands. They spoke in the most terrible way, personal insults. And I noticed that in the Islamic Republic, they announced throughout the election process, the Khamenei, who is the ultimate leader, said, "You must be civil throughout the process. You have to be respectful." And, I mean, that's a civilization, right? Saying, we're not going to allow this to deteriorate into elbowing and name-calling?
Exactly. You know, you are quite right in pointing out this contrasting attitude between the, you know, very choreographed televised debate in the U.S., where, you know, you had the sitting president, 81 years old, totally incoherent. You know, I will avoid the debate. It was quite comic, you know, when Biden came onto the stage. He sort of, you know, pointed towards the podium as if he had been primed to say, "Well, look, Mr. President, that's the podium that you're supposed to go to.
Is that mine? Yeah.
Let's go to the other one." And then Trump was completely, you know, he told lies through his teeth, and they, you know, the moderators didn't challenge him on anything.
No.
And you know, later on they said that, well, that was not our responsibility.
But they didn't even insist that they be civil.
Yeah.
Aren't you both Americans? Don't you guys shake hands? Isn't this actually a contest where the winner wins and the other guy says, "I did my best, congratulations"?
Exactly. And now look at the situation as it happened in Iran. During the televised debates, all of the candidates, you saw the Iranian style is to embrace each other. they all not only shook hands but embraced each other before as well as after the debate. And even when, in the final round, after the Interior Ministry announced that Dr. Pazishkian was the winner, the other candidate, Dr. Saeed Jalili, immediately issued a statement. He said that we should all respect the verdict of the Iranian people, and now we should all work together in order to strengthen the hands of the new president and to make sure that Iran is able to make progress. That it's not, now it is our responsibility to support him. This is the kind of civility that they demonstrate, but that's because, you know...
And by the way, doesn't that give the people confidence and they don't become paranoid and put upon that they have leaders who embarrass them?
Exactly. You see, the people of Iran, you know, obviously we need to keep in mind that Iran has 2,500-year civilization.
That's an advantage. That's cheating, having a civilization.
Exactly. I mean, America has no civilization. As Oscar Wilde had once quipped, he said that America has gone from barbarism to decadence without going through civilization.
That was
what we have in the U.S. And, you know, it calls itself a global power, a superpower, a light unto nation, a light on the hill, and so on. And all those.
Yes. By the way, thinking you're a superpower is a state of madness. It is just, it's frankly insane, you know, because how do you deal with all those other humans who outnumber you by a great margin? And they have no answer other than I will dominate them.
Yes, exactly.
I want to ask you, and probably lastly, here's the problem with it, in my mind, and they keep telling us there's a peace process here and we might get an agreement, but how can a process driven by and owned by Biden and his number two, and in which Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Egypt are the main third parties, how can this have a happy ending?
Exactly. You see, the thing is that the real problem in this so-called peace process is that you have one side which is totally adamant and refuses to abide by any rules, any regulations, any international law, and it keeps on blaming the victim for not coming to an agreement. So that whole process, you know, when you've got mediators, one side goes and says, okay, here is what we want the other side to agree to, and they say, okay, we accept these things, so let's sit down and see how we are going to implement it. And then the party that has put forward this proposal says, no, that's not what we wanted. We want something else now. So you cannot have any peace or any agreement when you have that kind of a situation whereby one party keeps on shifting the goalposts.
Yes.
So and the reason for that is obviously that, you know, if there is peace, there are going to be consequences for the Israeli leaders, particularly Netanyahu, because he has failed on a number of points, and this is going to, he's most likely going to end up in jail, and that's what he's trying to avoid, because he is terrified that if there is peace...
If he lets people out of jail, he's going to end up in jail. He has a paradox.
Yes, exactly. And can you imagine, I mean, you know, one of his ministers has stated that, you know, when the prison authorities notified the government that there are far too many prisoners in Israeli jails and they are, you know, being, there's just no more space. So one of the ministers said, who's basically supposed to be the security minister, Ben-Gavir, he said, well, we should start executing these prisoners. That's the solution to overcrowding in prison.
This a member of the government, sitting government, says execute the prisoners to solve the problem.
Yes, exactly. And in fact, even...
Utter barbarism.
Exactly. Even the United Nations Human Rights, you know, representatives have said that there is There are horrible things happening in Israeli prisons. Prisoners are not only being tortured. At least 54 prisoners have died under torture. They are being subjected to physical as well as sexual abuse. And they have called for an independent inquiry into these conditions in Israeli prisons.
Yeah.
Those are the horrible conditions that people are, you know, facing at the present time.
And that's the reality that Canadians know, and it's nothing to do with separate issues of political movements, et cetera. They see a horror going on, and they want to stop. Zafar, we're so grateful that you joined us. It's very enlightening. We look forward to talking to you more in the future.
It's my great pleasure, Phil. Thank you very much.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I think if Pedro is right, we're almost at the hour, almost at the point, and it will be Steve Fruitman, 33-45-78, coming up, and we'll be with you next week.
Les aristocrates, on les prendra. La 300 ans qui nous promettent qu'on va nous accorder du pain. La 300 ans qui donne des fêtes et qu'ils entretiennent des catins. La 300 ans qu'on nous écrase, assez de mensonges et de phrases. On ne veut plus mourir de faim. Ça ira, ça ira, ça ira, les aristocrates à la lanterne. Ah, ça ira, ça ira, ça ira, les aristocrates, on les pendra. La 300 ans qui font la guerre au son des fifres et des tambours. En nous laissant crever d'une misère, ça ne pouvait pas durer toujours. La 300 ans qui prennent nos hommes, qui nous traitent comme des bêtes de somme, ça ne pouvait pas durer toujours. Ah, ça ira, ça ira, ça ira, les aristocrates à la lanterne. Ah, ça ira, ça ira, ça ira, les aristocrates, on les pendra. Le châtiment pour vous s'apprête, car le peuple reprend ses droits. Vous êtes bien payés nos têtes, c'en est fini, messieurs les rois. Il ne faut plus compter sur les nôtres, on va s'offrir maintenant les vôtres, car c'est nous qui faisons la loi. Ah, ça ira, ça ira, ça ira, les aristocrates à la lanterne. Ah, ça ira, ça ira, ça ira, les aristocrates, on les pendra. Ah, ça ira, ça ira, ça ira, les aristocrates.